As some of you have no doubt noticed, we're in an election season. And I'd like to tell you what candidate I am not supporting, not because I don't think he has good values, but because I think it's impossible for him to win. And that's Moses. Now, I grant you there are practical difficulties to his running this year. But even if he were with us, and we could somehow deal with the problem of the fact that he speaks biblical Hebrew, and that his campaign manager will no doubt tell him to lose the speech impediment, I still don't think Moses could win. Now, I grant you that part of the reason that he wouldn't win is because the Torah is a tough platform to run on, and there are all sorts of things in it that really don't fit very well with a modern political and social view. But even that is not the reason why I want to suggest to you that Moses is an unsuitable candidate for 2012. It's because of what we see Moses do this morning. This is what happens. There's a rebellion. And Moses hears that there's a rebellion, and he does something that he has never done in the Torah before, which is he falls on his face. And the rabbis tell us what an extraordinary reaction this is, because usually, for most of history, the reaction of a leader to a rebellion is off with their heads. In other words, the first reaction to somebody in power whose power is challenged is to reject the challenge and the challengers. But Moses doesn't do that. The first thing he does is wonder, what have I done that was wrong, that was mistaken, that was misguided, that was not what God wished, which provoked such a challenge? And not only that, but then Moses asks the leaders of the rebellion to come and meet with him. And they refuse. And I read this and I think about what happens in our politics today. First of all, as you know, if somebody from your side, whichever side you're on, goes out and says something that disagrees with what the head of the party says, left or right, Democrat or Republican, then there's all this vaccine maneuvering. And the next day, they have to go out and say, what I said yesterday, I didn't really mean. Because I couldn't possibly disagree in an election season with anything that the leaders of my parties don't agree with. And even more, everyone lies in wait how to answer the challenge from the other side, not to answer it in Moses' fashion, not to say, you know what, you have a good point. I got to think about that. Maybe I will modify what I say based on the challenge from the other party. Instead, what you do is you start in motion an entire machinery of what are appropriately called spin doctors, who will explain why the challenge from the other side may seem plausible, but contradicts morality, decency, history, the other things that the guy has said before, and will trash the future. And if you're not aware of this, all I can say is you don't follow politics very closely. Because that's the mode of discourse. Over and over and over again, and it doesn't matter where you look on the political spectrum in an election season, nobody's different. Now, this doesn't mean, and shouldn't be taken to mean, that criticism isn't a good thing. In fact, those of you who were here when Jonah Lehrer spoke a couple of weeks ago, the guy who wrote the book on creativity called Imagine, he told us something fascinating that most people, I think, are not aware of. I was trained, as were many other people, that when you want to get the best from people, their best ideas, what you do is you create these sessions in which everybody talks and nobody criticizes. You offer whatever ideas you offer and you make a big list, and the one thing that you're not allowed to do in such sessions is criticize the idea of the other person, because the whole notion here is to get the best ideas possible. Well, said Lehrer, in study after study after study, those sorts of sessions are shown to not produce the best ideas. The best ideas are when you can get criticized. Because when you are criticized, it raises your game. Then you can't just say whatever you want. You got to think, if I say this, they're going to say that, so maybe I should say this, which ends up to be better than what you started with. This is why, in part, and this won't surprise any of you who know the culture, this is why, in part, Israel does so well in software startups. Because you want to get criticized, say something in Israel. Doesn't matter what it is. Political, business, Torah, anything. And before the words are out of your mouth, there is a culture of criticism, and that's good. But a culture of criticism is different from a culture of rejection. A culture of criticism is, nah, I have a better idea. Which is true, by the way, of every Israeli taxi driver in the world. If you've taken as many taxis in Israel as I have, you know whatever it is you say. Nah. But it's a culture of criticism, not of rejection. And in our politics, unfortunately, there's a culture of rejection and not of criticism. Now, that is especially true during an election season, when there is so much at stake. But unfortunately, the habits that people develop are not so easily dismissed. And if you learn that whatever comes out of the guy's mouth on the other side of the aisle must be wrong by virtue of the fact that he stands over there and not over here, then it will be very hard to divest yourself of that when you're done. You may know that the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Doris Kearns Goodwin some years ago wrote a book called A Team of Rivals about Abraham Lincoln. It's a wonderful book. And the thrust of the book is what Lincoln did when he became president was he took everybody who criticized him, ran against him, opposed him, and he brought them into his cabinet. Not because then they would agree with him, but precisely because he knew that his best critics could be his best allies. Why does Moses call Datan and Abiram? He doesn't call them in to say, you're wrong, and you shouldn't do this, and God's against you. He calls them in because he wants to hear what they have to say. Because in fact, in life, as in professional life, what Edmund Burke taught is true, which is that the brightest person in the world can't come up with an idea that is unimprovable by criticisms even of those who are less able than he. You see this again and again and again. It's why Moses doesn't run the whole show, why Aharon in this portion is not only rewarded, but God tells him all the things that the Levites and the priests will have. Because you need different centers of power, checks, balances, criticism, but all of that goes better with listening. That's the first thing that is said about Moses when the rebellion breaks out. By Yishma Moshe, Moses heard. He listened. It's amazing sometimes how much you can learn if you do. And astonishing how stuck in a position you can stay if you don't. So, Will political life change? Not anytime soon. And Moses is not going to make it. You won't even hear his speech at the convention. But it is worth listening for instances of listening and encouraging it, both in private life and in public life. The words, "You know what? You're right," or "I was wrong," are extraordinarily important and precious, and an indication not of weakness, but of maturity. Thank you. So listen for them and use them sometimes. And if you disagree with me, tell me after the service and I'll try to listen. Shabbat Shalom.